Over the last some years, I've been sort of playing around with some very vague ideas, and every now and again I have the courage to ask some physicist friend what he thinks. And usually what happens is they listen very politely, and they say, well, that's very interesting, why don't you go away and work on it? The most encouraging response I got actually was a couple of years ago from Gerard Tuft. So when I said to him I had some ideas, I was thinking, he said, I think I have some ideas too, what's your ideas? So I started to explain my ideas. I think he thought I was going to throw a lot of mathematics at him. And when I finished, he said, that sounds like physics. So that was really encouraging. But then more recently, I faced a much more formidable obstacle. I was in Princeton, and I was talking to Ed Witten. And after I'd been there a couple of days, I very plucked up my courage and sort of put my ideas to him. He listened very carefully, very politely, as he always does. And then he thought for a microsecond. He said, it won't work. Here are four reasons. Salvo came out very fast, why it couldn't work and all that. So I felt like a small destroyer that had taken on a big battleship, and few salvos had destroyed the funnels, the engine, the driving, the holes in the side. I was limping back to port, just above the waterline. And so you see a very battle-hardened and sort of depressed speaker before you. But anyway, having gone through that, I felt I could sort of pluck up enough courage to try a more friendly audience. And since I told David I'm here for best part of 2 weeks, I thought if I spoke early on, that would give you plenty of time to absorb what I'm saying, come back and tell me all the reasons why it doesn't work, so then I can forget about it and do something else, or you can make encouraging sounds and say, well, perhaps there's something you can do, or at the least what I hope to do is to provoke people to think. And if they say this doesn't work, well, try something else. So this is meant to be a provocative talk. So the title of the talk is, Does Use Have a Memory? Some Speculations on Quantum Mechanics, and the subtitle is Crazy Thoughts of an Old Man. And I share these crazy thoughts with another old man some years back, Einstein, who, as you know, never accepted quantum theory as a final theory, and he searched for a unified theory in some geometrical sense of what the forces were at the time. And all physicists think, of course, old man wasted his time the last 30 years. So I'm in good company anyway. Now, of course, as you all know, that we have a nice standard model of elementary particles based on gauge theory, which is ultimately geometrical theory, which attempts, and then beyond that, people are trying to attempt to combine quantum mechanics and general relativity, which is what string theory and M theory and a few other dots after that are supposed to be trying to do, and that's why this meeting is taking place, and that's what we're all involved with. And so the question is really, one's trying to modify, in this framework, one's trying to modify general relativity to fit into a quantum mechanical framework, and that is this orthodox view. There are some mavericks around, like Roger Penrose, who believe that you should do it the other way around. You should modify quantum mechanics to fit into general relativity, or perhaps a bit of both. But certainly, there are these two rather extreme points of view. Now, let me first make it clear that I am an enthusiast for string theory. So, otherwise I wouldn't be here. Otherwise people wouldn't have invited me into the place. So string theory, first of all, you can look at it as from the point of view of a mathematician. And some of you are mathematicians like me. So I think string theory is certainly not yet fully rigorous in any mathematical sense, or nowhere close to being rigorous, but it has led to remarkable mathematical results, which are beautiful and powerful, and have produced several Fields medals on the side, and which I think Witten made this quote that it was the mathematics the physics of the 21st century discovered a century earlier. And so I certainly believe that the things that are coming out of string theory from a mathematical point of view will provide the foundation for a vast amount of mathematics in the 21st century. So a young man starting now has a big future if he gets involved with those sort of mathematics, and it encompasses a whole spectrum of things in mathematics, not narrowly focused. So I believe that. I'm therefore an enthusiast, and I'm a propagandist, and I go around telling mathematicians this, and I've got a lot of flack from some of my mathematical friends for swallowing hook, line, sinker, all this mumbo-jumbo the physicists do. But I'm a believer. And of course, one of the key things that comes out from that point of view of a mathematician is all these marvelous dualities, in which one quantum field theory and another quantum field theory are said to be the same thing by some marvelous duality. These dualities then lead to mathematical consequences which can be verified by some method or other. And in some sense, which I think is not too unreasonable, one can think of these things as some kind of nonlinear Fourier transform, which Fourier transform theory is a sort of linear duality, which converts some problem into a dual problem. These are much deeper and much more nonlinear, and therefore have tremendous power. So that's what a mathematician looking at it can say, this is roughly what string theory is all about, and it'll have impacts all over the place. Now, the question is, what about physics? So from the point of view of physics, fundamental question really is, is it the physics of the 21st century? Is this going to be the answer to the great search for the unification of the forces and so on? And if so, how much further needs to be done? And there are different schools of thought on this. Those who believe we're just around the corner, just one little push, and we'll be there. And there are those who believe perhaps we need a fundamentally new idea at some level. And the question will be then, what will the ultimate theory look like? Well, I may not be here to see it. Some of you young guys may be, depending how optimistic you are. What will this theory, which people are aiming for, what will it look like? Well, what it does is use a vast amount of mathematical structure. If you ask what bits of mathematics don't go into string theory, you're hard put to it. It uses vast amounts of algebra, geometry, analysis, everything you can think of almost is there. So this is a tremendous apparatus, some vast towering construction. And if that's the ultimate picture, what question arises, is this the way God created the universe? Did he sit down one day and said, first of all, I'm going to polish off the Lie groups, then I'm going to develop supersymmetry, and then I work my way through algebraic geometry, I read Griffiths and Harris, and so on. And then he learned all that, he said, now let the world be. Well, it's a mind-boggling idea. And I can put the question another way, which is, I think, almost equivalent, namely, what would Einstein think? Not that I'm identifying Einstein with God, it's the other way around, but Einstein... Einstein constantly introduced God. When he wanted to make a convincing argument, he would say, God doesn't do this, God doesn't do that. It's not quite clear what sort of God it was he had in mind, certainly not any kind of orthodox, but he was constantly referring to God doesn't play dice, he isn't malicious. This is the kind of question he would certainly ask. Did God really invent all this supersymmetry junk? Well, those are the kind of basic questions which, in some sense, people who work in string theory have to address. And there are, of course, skeptics who say it's all misguided, and there are enthusiasts who say we're just about there, and there are all sorts of possibilities in between. So, now the question I'm going to raise is, is there perhaps a simpler way of looking at things? So let's sort of ask what this might mean and where we might want to go. Is there a simpler way of looking at things? And perhaps M theory, whatever it is so complicated because we're just trying to solve some theory which is inherently simple in some ways, but we have to attack it by all the tools at our disposal. We take all the mathematical junk in the cupboard, we open the doors, we bring out old ideas, and we throw absolutely everything at this theory because that's all we've got. The old story about the drunk and the lamppost, the drunk going around the lamppost, and the chap who comes to see him and says, what are you doing? He says, I'm looking for my keys, and he says, well, are you sure you dropped your keys here? He says, no, but if I didn't drop them here, I'd never found them. So the idea is you use the tools you've got, and that's why we're doing all this complicated story. Now, let's go back to history. Forecasting the future is a bit difficult. It's easier to look at the past. Let's look at the past of some aspects of science. If you go back to the old days of Ptolemy, he developed his theory of epicycles to describe the motions of the planets. You started off with the circle, because the circle was the most beautiful object, but it didn't quite fit, so you had circles rolling on circles, and you had circles rolling on circles, rolling on circles, and they were called epicycles. It's a bit like perturbation theory. And this ended up by producing a remarkably accurate way of describing the planetary orbits. It's so accurate that there was absolutely no need to really look for a better theory. And so for hundreds of years, this was the theory that was standard. Then Kepler came along and made more precise observations, and he found there were these, before in Tycho Brahe, they found there were these elliptic orbits. And he was then searching for some understanding of the orbits of the planets. And he had a beautiful mathematical idea, which was to say, God created the platonic solids, like the hedron, the cube, and the five regular solids, and he created these planets, which at that time were not all the ones we now know. And he said, if you imagine that between the planetary orbits you try to have shells which surround the various platonic solids in a certain order, the sizes, you find a remarkable similarity between the sizes of the platonic solids and the planetary orbits, and to within a few percent. It was a very good description, so he wrote a magnificent treatise explaining how he could unify everything by using this beautiful idea of the platonic solid that God had created to explain planetary orbits. In my public lecture I'll show a nice picture of Kepler's monumental treatise. And of course later on you know that this is all replaced by a totally simple new idea, Newtonian theory of the inverse square law and the calculus to develop it, and modern science began. So I'm trying to say, you know, could we be somehow retracing those steps? Could we be waiting for Newton? As we know in the history of science, if you want to make fundamental progress, quite often the first thing to do is to take a step back. You go back and you look at your assumptions and you ask, are they all really necessary? Could we do without something, discard something, in order to get around all our problems? And of course, Einstein did that with space and time. The separation of space and time was a dogma which is implicit in everybody's thinking. He saw how to unify that and go forward and develop his theory. And many other situations in physics have happened the same way. So the question is, I'm asking here, is can we find a simple, in quotes, geometrical theory incorporating general relativity, which is very difficult to solve, M-theory arises from our best attempts to solve this very difficult theory. Is that, in a very general terms, I want to ask that question. At this sense, at this stage, you can't object. I'm not proposing anything. I'm just raising questions. So let's go a bit further. So now let's be a bit more specific. Now, the most fundamental aspect of all theory is, of course, in present quantum mechanics. That's the universal framework in which everything takes place. Quantum mechanics, quantum field theory, and so on. So this great tower that we built, or is being built, a bit rests on the foundation of quantum mechanics. If you want to step back and rebuild the tower in some way, the first thing you've got to do is ask yourself questions about quantum mechanics. If you can't change that, you're inevitably sucked along the line to where we are at present. So you have to think of questioning that. Question is, can quantum mechanics perhaps emerge from some alternative theory? And it is in itself a very good approximation, perhaps, to this theory. Well, you can ask this question, harmless, and of course we can say Newtonian gravity was a really good approximation to Einstein's theory. Now, what's the requirements of any such theory? Well, of course, any such theory has to ultimately agree with experiments. So we're not trying to dispose of experimental physicists however much we might like to. Secondly, it should be as simple as possible. Simple is always in quotation marks. Simplicity is in the eye of the beholder. If you ask a group theorist, he'll tell you there are these things called simple groups. And a simple group, actually, is conceptually simple, but it's extremely hard. And general relativity, to a mathematician brought up on differential geometry, is extremely simple. The equations are transparent. And yet, the physical consequences and implications are extremely hard, and it's difficult to actually solve in practice. So simplicity is an intricate notion. Nevertheless, it is the thing that guides scientists as a whole. When they try to find a theory of something, they really aim ultimately for simplicity, because without simplicity, you're just tabulating results, numbers, without meaning. And this was greatly goes back to an old thing known as Occam's razor. Occam was a medieval philosopher, and his basic assumption was that you shouldn't make unnecessary assumptions. Take the simplest assumption you could as a working hypothesis. Don't overburden yourself with unnecessary hypotheses. And the razor was the one that cut away all the junk. And the theory, well, it's not only should be simple, but in some sense should eventually, after you've got there, seem again natural, in some quotation marks. It shouldn't be too artificial. It should have some simplicity and naturality, whatever those terms mean. These are the sort of desiderata that you'd like to have. And, of course, it would have been approved by Einstein. I'm looking for something which would ultimately have his stamp of approval. And if I have Einstein's stamp of approval, even retrospectively, I'll be able to hold the opponents at bay. So the question is, we're going to start off with, and this is the headline of the lecture, is, you know, does the universe have a memory? Does the universe have a memory? And what does this mean? Well, what I'm really saying, what basic assumption should we discard if we're trying to sort of rethink things? What can we do? Well, if you think about it, people have discarded almost everything. I mean, what's left to be discarded after you think of all the things that have been thrown away? Practically nothing. So it's very hard to find something you can discard sensibly. Well, what could you? You could discard, for example, the continuity of space-time. People do speculate. Is space-time really granular at some stage? And this continuity was an assumption which is perhaps should be discarded. And many people have tried to build models of this and develop them, but it fails for various reasons. I mean, a discrete model is very drastic, really sort of shaping physics, because the calculus has been much too useful to be thrown out. So although it's theoretically a model which someday we might decide is really important, it never gets very far because we don't know what to do with it. So I don't want to discard the continuity of space-time. After all, I'm a geometer. Causality. Well, causality is a very important aspect of reality. You do experiments and you work out the consequences. You know, it's very difficult to think in terms without cause and effect. But causality is something you don't want to get away. But the causality has different forms. There is what you call the strong form of causality, which is that the present determines the future. If you know everything in the present time, then you can predict the development in the future. Now, that has been the paradigm ever since Newton. All science is based on this principle. Of course, in classical mechanics, it's quite clear. You have position and velocity of the various particles, and you know the force laws, then you can determine the dynamics. That is, given the initial data, you solve the equations for determining the future. Now, already in that those assumptions, there are some subtle difficulties. If you think about it, position, for example. Well, position goes back to, if you do Euclidean geometry in the Greeks, they define a point as something which has position and no magnitude. Well, they knew already that was an idealization. There was nothing in the world that had no magnitude, in some sense. So it was a mathematical idealization that lived in the world of Plato's ideas, but it was an extremely valuable technical tool in which to attack questions in the real world. So position has become universally accepted, and that's where geometry comes into the story. We can move around in space. Velocity raises slightly more difficult questions. What is velocity? Well, velocity is, of course, you measure something at a certain moment, and a few seconds later or microsecond later, you see how far it's traveled. You take the difference between them, and then you divide by the distance, and you go to the limit by calculus, and you get the velocity. Well, of course, that notion of taking small differences and going to zero is the source origin of calculus, and it caused terrible headaches to all the pioneers in the field. What was infinitesimally small quantity delta x? It was a serious question which took hundreds of years and many great brains to really master, but now we've solved it. Velocity is thought of as a natural thing, and we think a particle has a velocity which is part of its data. But actually, from any physical point of view, there is no such thing as a velocity you can measure. You certainly can't find an infinite limit. Infinitely small things don't exist in physics. So the nearest you could do is take two very small nearby measurements and take the distance, and that's your approximation to velocity. Velocity is an idealization. So even in classical mechanics, the notion of velocity is suspect. Now in quantum mechanics, of course, you might say quantum mechanics doesn't have the strong causality in this form. That's a mistake. Quantum mechanics is simplest form. You have a state in Hilbert space, and you evolve it according to Hamiltonian, and that is well-defined future. Given the present state determines the future, if you know the state in Hilbert space. Now, the difficulty is that knowing the state in Hilbert space is the source of all the philosophical difficulties, because if you're an experimentalist and you want to find the state, you have to do experiments which you can't carry out, and that leads you to various difficulties. So all the argument about quantum mechanics has to do with the data in the initial data. That's the theory. It gives you unique prediction. So both classical and quantum mechanics do make this very strong assumption of causality that the present predicts the future. On the other hand, you could discard that in a strong form, but keep causality by saying a weak form of causality. And a weak form of causality would say that the present and past determine the future. And the past is, of course, memory. You know the past, the past is what's in our heads as our memory. And so that is still causality, because you know we've got where we are through our past. If we follow that whole story, the future will follow. That's still causality, but it's not, of course, strong causality in the traditional sense. And if you think about it a bit, you know, in biological terms, we all carry our DNA, which is the consequence of evolution. So in some sense, our past is with us and is involved in the future development. So it's philosophically not such an unreasonable notion. So let's pursue this. So this is what I'm proposing, is that the thing we discard is the strong form of causality, and we keep the weak form of causality. Let's explore that. This is all an exploration. If I had a final theory which worked, I'll be on my way to receive the Nobel Prize. I wouldn't be wasting my time here. But this is an exploration, raising questions. Nothing, no great ambitions at this moment. You see, I'm an old man. If I was a young man and I had a brilliant idea like this, I would keep it to myself. I would work for 10 years, then I'd publish the results and make a spectacular noise in the world. As I'm an old man, I have neither the time nor the energy to do that. So I'm offering it freely. All the young people here, you can get the Nobel Prize. Remember me 50 years down the line. So the question is, if we start off with this kind of philosophical basis, and this is, I think, what you can see why Tuff said this sounds like physics. There's no mathematics yet. So the question is, can we develop a physical theory on this basis? You know, is it possible? Can we do anything? All very well to have a big idea, but how do you get started? What is it? Well, let's try and think a bit harder what you do. And so in particular, we certainly want to have a mathematical theory. What kind of mathematics would be needed? How could you put this into mathematical form in order to get anywhere? And now we get back to the harder question, and how would this, when you got it, how would it relate to standard physics as we know it, and in particular, the classical and quantum mechanics? How would it relate to what we know? Because I'm not proposing anything which is totally revolutionary, discard the baby in the bathwater. I want to just tweak things a little bit, make questions and fundamental assumptions, and keep as much as I can of everything. I want quantum mechanics to still be there. I don't want it to be discarded totally. I want all the great successes of quantum mechanics mean that you've got to have it. But I want to start one stage further back, which asks a little question and see where I get. But I want to keep everything. So I want to be very conservative in some ways after having asked that initial question. And the question is now, are these requirements much too drastic and hopeless, like the attempt to discretize the universe, which I regard as hopeless at the present time? We don't know how to get going. Is this equally drastic and hopeless? Well, I hope to try and show you that perhaps it's not. Maybe we can. Well, first thing is, of course, the memory, your knowledge of the past, if it's to fit in with the experimental world, must, of course, be very short. Very short term. The very short memory of the last few microseconds is really effectively all you need to know. If it wasn't for that, we would never have got where we are in terms of our classical approximation. So its memory must be, we're not worried about long-term memory, extremely short-term memory. That's the only thing that really is supposed to matter. And it just, of course, should have some scale. And the scale on which the short-term memory is meant to be effective should be a scale that is relative to quantum mechanics. After quantum mechanics only enters the game when you start looking at very small scales. And classical mechanics works fine at longer distances. So this memory is supposed to think of as happening at the quantum scale, levels which are relevant in quantum mechanics. And in fact, more precisely, the scale, if you measure it in some way, should be related to things like Planck's constant. So Planck's constant should be related to the fundamental scale that may be involved into the theory. I said related to. So I know that Planck's constant is not a scale, but it's a scale that is going to be relevant and will be related to Planck's constant in appropriate ways when you get the right dimensions. My knowledge of physics is not very deep, but I did realize that Planck's constant wasn't actually a scale. But it's related to scale in various ways. Quantum mechanics certainly is related to scales. And of course, if you pursue this idea, then of course the idea that the ignorance of our past, the fact that we don't know our past, is of course a source of uncertainty. And if there is a relationship with quantum mechanics, this will be related to the uncertainty that comes around in quantum mechanics. So this is the sort of where uncertainty will still be there, but it'll be probably because we don't know our past, because we can't do retrospective experiments. That's certainly the case. So although we have causality, we don't have certainty. And then you can ask now the technical question. After mathematical physics, the fact that the future depends on the present has been embodied in differential equations ever since Newton. Differential equations determine the laws, the precise laws, which we then have to unravel. And if you're going to replace that, what are you going to do? What are you going to replace it with? Well, it's not hopeless. Let's start off, we go back to square one, let's start off with simple examples of dynamics. There's dynamics, which, and then we'll later on, no doubt, when we'll try and tackle quantum field theories, but this is all going back to square one. Let's consider a simple example of dynamics. In dynamics, you have some particle, which is moving in space, ordinary three-dimensional space, evolving in time. That's classical trajectory to particles. And they are determined by, usually, ordinary differential equations. Let's say the simplest sort of case when you have just a first-order differential equation like that. So the derivative dx by dt is some function of position. It can also be time-dependent. And you solve this differential equation, and you have the, with initial conditions, and you'll get the flow. That's how dynamics starts. Well, how can you generalize that to involve the past? Well, you can generalize it. You say you have still a differential equation, but it depends on the past. And these actually do exist in the mathematical literature. They're called retarded differential equations. In other words, dx by dt depends not just on x at time t, but it depends on xs for all less than equal to t. So given the past, that determines the derivative, then you look to solve it. And these things have a name. They're called the retarded differential equations. And they do exist in the mathematical literature, as I discovered. So such theories exist, but they are very difficult. So such theories exist, but are very difficult, even for simple equations. Now, where would you start? Well, if you go to the library and you look for a book, you will find books. And here's a book by Jack Hale called Functional Differential Equations, published in 1971. It's not a new subject. And in there, you will find he gives long lists of examples of interesting differential equations of various types involving knowing the memory, which come from essentially engineering situations, in particular from control theory. Lots of them, lots of different ones. So the whole range of interesting examples, which justifies you writing a book about them and developing the theory. But the results is that you can have a theory, but even the simplest equations present much more difficulty than ordinary differential equations of the classical type. Now, it's rather interesting, this book I found in the Edinburgh University Library. And you see, it's published in 1971, it's over 30 years ago. And in the margin of the book, there is a penciled price. It says £3. Well, you don't need to know much about the dollar-pound exchange rate, but £3 would be cheap for a book now. So this shows that the book was bought by the library around about 1971. So this book has been in the library since 1971, and I was the first person to borrow the book. That shows you that this subject is not very well known.
I
knew this easier. So this is for the physicists, but in the building I am, it's called the James Clerk Maxwell Building. The library is chaired by mathematicians and physicists, and nobody still borrowed the book. So there are many possibilities for time dependence in the past, and this book gives long lists of them. Many of them are arisen from examples in engineering, control theory, and so this is a mathematical theory which exists. So we're not entering unknown territory as far as mathematical technicalities are concerned. Now, by the way, when I mentioned this to Ed Witten, he said, yes, of course, this, but when you have problems of this type, like engineering, control theory, they always mean that some variables have been thrown away and discarded, hidden variables, if you like. And so in fundamental physics, these shouldn't occur. So it's a very, very powerful argument, but I have to ignore it for the purposes of the lecture. So the simplest example of equations of this type would be of the following form. Here's the most simple baby example. You take a differential equation in the form dx by dt, depending on time, on position x at time t, and at position x at time t minus r, where r is a fixed constant. Part in the back history, you need to know your position at that instant of time and the present, then you can solve the equation. These equations are the simplest kind of equation, and their theories have been worked out, and you can prove existence theorems, you can prove the mathematical theory is respectable, existence and uniqueness theorem of the kind that guarantee you that mathematics will work. In general, these equations are called differential difference equations, because they involve both derivatives and differences. And they incorporate, in this particular model, some example, they incorporate this fundamental length scale, the distance r, which separates the point from the past. And in some sense, if you're thinking that fundamental physics has some kind of fundamental scale, this may be a good thing for interpreting it. Now, yeah?
Are you going to try to get something with, say, special relativity as part of the structure?
Yeah, all this is going to be fun. Why settle for special relativity? General relativity. These are all initial questions, and I'm glad to be bombarded with more questions. But let me just make a point here. So you notice in this particular example, if you took this seriously, we'd be trying to incorporate a discrete picture, because you'd have dependence at r and at tm time t and t minus r, which are discretely apart. But it wouldn't be a discrete space-time, because we're embedding this in a continuous framework. So we still use the calculus, but there is some sort of discreteness appearing in the equations. And as I said, mathematical theory exists. You can prove these solutions are well-behaved and so on. So the territory of calculus has been extended, but not thrown away. Now, you can even take... I'm just looking for baby models. You know, all physicists know that... Well, I've learned from physicists that you can't solve the thing, you take a toy model. Well, that was in the first order case, it would just be the position. In the first order equation. Yeah. I'm sorry. No, the Cauchy data is not the past. Well, but you've got to have it for all R, so you see, I mean, it's really the past.
For all R.
Well, no. The R is fixed. But you see, the equation is being solved for all T. So wherever you are, there's a bit in the past. So if you want to know the roundabout where you are, you need to know roundabout where R was in the past. So effectively, you've got to know the whole past.
So how do you
simplify? Well, if you know everything up to time zero, how do you solve the equation afterwards? And that is a well-defined problem.
That itself.
Yes, and you're looking for a solution of this equation for all T, given the solution for negative T. It's as simple as that. And the theory is that such solutions exist with well-behaved properties. So the initial data is the entire past. When I first started in this game, I was very naive, and I didn't know anything about the books. My first attempt was to try to convert this into an differential equation in infinite dimensions by many variables. I could see maybe that's not the way it's done. I don't think it gets you very far. So I don't think that's very helpful, and certainly not for complicated versions. So, but the theory, analytical theories of this kind, exist by standard analysis. You do estimates and, you know, rigorous proofs, and you prove continuity of solutions. So the theory of mathematics has been worked out. It's not as simple as normal, and it very much depends on the nature of the equations you take. Not by no means all possible equations, but the simplest kind of equations of this kind, they can handle. So the theory is available, and... first of all, I'm not selling any particular model at the moment. I'm saying we're investigating possible situations where the past dependence is important, governed by some equation, differential equation that involves the past. Here is the simplest example of a type of equation. But you could have much more complicated ones. For example, you could have R1, R2, an infinite sequence. You could integrate over the past. You get integral. So vastly more complicated equations. Yes, well, all of them depend on the whole past history. But yes, the simplest one. Well, how do you make it depend on the past? You have to write a formula.
Well,
one would involve an integration.
Excellent example.
Yes.
Well, wonderful example. Any field theory will give rise to one that depends on the past without any discreteness.
Okay. Well, I'm not selling this particular one, and I'm not getting to field theory yet. So I'm just saying equations of this type do exist, and you can have more complicated ones with past dependence, which are much more complicated, involve integration. And so they're all on offer. I'm not selling any particular one. A toy model would be considered this one. But I'm not offering. Yeah.
There is one.
Yeah.
Probably worth keeping in mind.
Yeah.
Totally efficient. Which is otherwise known as electric analysis.
Okay.
Where you have it other than the vacuum.
Okay.
Well, now it has to know the history of all the other charged particles in the universe in the past.
I remember being told this by physicists when I first asked it. And I haven't totally absorbed it, but I'm happy to relearn it. I'm here for a week, so by the time I go, or 2 weeks, I'll have learned all this. But whether it'll totally change my mind is another matter. I'm still plugging a particular point of view, and you can tell me at the end, you know, whether it's totally wrong. Let me So the simplest, even a simpler model than the differential equation I wrote down would be one that doesn't involve any derivatives at all. Just involves functional relations between x at t and x at t minus r. That's an example of a trivial kind. And this looks like a difference equation, but it's a difference equation embedded in a continuum. So what this amounts to is the following. You see, imagine you've got a trajectory. Here's the trajectory of the particle, which is supposed to obey this law. And what it means is that if you take a point, then you take a step r backwards in time, you get this one, and 2r backwards in time, you get that one. So there will be an infinite sequence of points where the value is governed by a difference equation, which you can solve, given initial data, which value at one point. But you have a whole family of these parameterized by the points in between. You can start anywhere. So what you get is a one-parameter family of difference equations. And that means that to solve this equation, really, you solve these difference equations, and the only condition is that they should match to the ends. So it's like having a difference equation on an interval, depending on a parameter, with a boundary condition. Or you can think of it the other way around. You can think of solving it at point in time, with the initial data being the value of the function in a small interval. So in this model, your initial data would be a little wobble of the function. And if you first glance, you wouldn't see anything except this rather dense set of points. It's almost like discretizing space. And then the notions like velocity and all that would be hidden in this little wiggle, which would be the function in between. That's an extremely simple model, probably much too naive for anything, but you know, it's one of the class of equations one could think about. Now, if you in classical mechanics, when people quantize things, there's some formal rule, which is not, you know, not quite straightforward, but the principle works pretty well, by which you take an equation in classical mechanics and you get a quantum equation by following certain rules. So this is called quantization in some way. Now, you can imagine this being done in this framework. You could take an equation which involves derivatives, standard equation, your favorite equation, and then you could just replace every time you see a derivative by a finite difference, by just going backwards along the trajectory of the path. This will give you almost a universal rule, which will convert differential equations into things of this kind. So that will give you a process which you might call something like quantization. And it has the advantage that it will depend on a parameter, which, when you make it go to zero, will recover for you classical mechanics. So there's a well-defined process, I've almost told you what it is, which will take any equation in classical mechanics, produce a more complicated theory, which you can call quantization in quotes, and it'll depend on a parameter which will recover the classical limit in the limit. So that's a feature of quantum mechanics. Even in these very simple models, you can reproduce some aspect of it. And you might say that this process of looking at the finite differences actually corresponds a bit to experimental reality. I just wanted to point out, velocities don't really exist in some strict sense.
That's the fourth time you said that. I will object. You can measure velocity instantaneously. There are physical effects that depend on velocity. For example, if you have a particle, a charged particle moving velocity, it experiences a force. It interacts, in a way, having a Hamiltonian proportion of velocity. So if you have a charged particle moving in a magnetic field, there are ways of instantaneously measuring velocity. Nothing that forces you.
Let me suggest that.
Define velocity by doing. To measure velocity by
units. Except I would say that what you're describing to me is a process combination of experiment and theory that leads to an answer.
As all measurement is.
Well, all right. So in that sense, obviously, if you build a theoretical framework which incorporates this notion, it will appear. But if you're a naive person and you ask, can you measure velocity by, you know, physical instruments, I say you can't. Only indirectly through assuming some other theory.
Everything is indirect. You always measure a photon.
Okay, all right. Well, we're getting into semantics in some sense. I won't argue the point. I just gave you my point of view. Now, let me, if all this stuff so far has seemed to be speculative, I've learned a bit from physicists, and that is, if you put the word super in front, it always sounds better. So this is super speculation, okay? Now, many of you know some of the work of Alan Kohn, which is development of something called non-commutative geometry. Now, non-commutative geometry is a very rich, beautiful part of mathematics, which has an interesting history. It relates to ergodic theory, it relates to number theory, It relates to differential geometry, has links to theoretical physics. He was certainly inspired by the non-commutativity that comes into the Heisenberg relations, so on. So, and he has made at various times assertions that it is useful or could be useful in fundamental physics. And there are links around, it has been used by various people, to relate to things that physicists do. So there's some indication that it is actually relevant. Now, one of the things Kohn did, which I don't know if you know about it, he found a very simple model of non-commutative geometry, which incorporated the standard model of elementary particle physics, all, with all the various fields and all the very complicated Lagrangian. He got it out of something extremely simple. Now, I've never been totally sold on that. It looks like a bit of magic, I mean, formal magic. It's not clear what it means, and I don't think any physicists are much impressed either. But it has the merit. It's something very simple. You just turn the handle and you do the standard bit of non-commutative geometry, and lo and behold, all the right numbers of fields come out. He, Kohn, was quite keen on this, understandably. Now, I'm just saying, is it conceivable that would be related to the ideas I've been talking about? So you see, I talked about points, one instant, points short distance away. So suddenly you've got two copies of your space. Yeah. What I mean is that he writes down in his framework a non-commutative geometry. I'll say, well, the non-commutative geometry is actually, you take two copies of space-time, and you think one of them is carrying the complex numbers, the other is carrying the quaternions. And the sum of those two is a non-commutative algebra. In a non-commutative algebra framework, you can write down Yang-Mills theory. You can develop Yang-Mills Lagrangians. You write them out. And they're, because of non-commutative, the laws are a bit different. When you've done it, you find you have all these collections of extra fields. So it's a formal bit of algebra, if you like, based on starting off with a rather bizarre, but very simple non-commutative algebra, just a matrix algebra, you know, two bits of it.
You get out SU2 plus SU1 without putting it in?
I think so, yeah. Well, he starts out with he must choose a particular group.
Yeah.
He starts with, but I don't think he puts them all in. He gets, anyway, he gets all the fields. I mean, I didn't follow the details. It's published some time ago. And it may be a purely formal trick, it may have no meaning whatsoever.
Does he get
sweet metal? I don't know exactly what he gets, but all I'm saying is he claims to get something interesting. and I'm just saying, well, if he was right, there's maybe some link between this and my idea here, having some value at one point and a value little just a point. Those are two points, and you can well imagine, and this is an important point I'd like to make, is that the two values, x times t, and x times t minus r needn't appear symmetrically. There's no reason for this equation to be symmetrical in time. The forward and backward are not necessarily the same. The equation could be asymmetrical. For example, it might involve at time t, it might involve you talking with spinners, at time t minus r, you might have some scalar function. There's no need for them to be the same, and that the spinners and scalars would lead right to algebras of different types, which are fitting with. But that was the supersymmetry part, the super theory, speculation part, which you obviously saw was a bit shakier than the speculation part. Let me forget about that. Let's go back to something. Yeah. Yeah.
So you were replacing the x by the t by the
t. Right, yes.
But what about the equation? Sometimes when you go x to 2, here's the say potential energy, you're going to replace that by x to 2.
No, I mean, only derivatives are being replaced, okay?
No, but I mean,
No, well, I mean, that, no doubt that, well,
and then that too would also have
just take a mean value, you mean?
Yeah.
I wasn't thinking, you could do that. You could, of course, take that. You could take that. I mean, that's a, but that wouldn't be the same process I'm suggesting, because the one I'm suggesting would have the property that, depending on a parameter, you recover the derivative. I want to get something which would reproduce the classical equation under limiting process. If you don't do that, your theory fails at the hurdle.
Of course.
I just gave you a simple example of how it might happen, just as an illustration. There's millions of ways it can happen, and this is not very far. But it can be done, and it can be done quite simply if you want. So let me go back. The relation to quantum mechanics that is being postulated here will be something like this. And the question is, means. Can you associate to the plasticity of a particle, so this function, x of s, s of z, can you associate to a vector in a Hilbert space, which evolves, perhaps after some approximation, according to the Schrödinger equation of the relevant model? Can you somehow make this link between the past history and the state of Hilbert space? Because that's how I'm trying to indicate that the uncertainty in quantum mechanics arises about the knowledge of the state. Here, the uncertainty in this picture arises out of lack of knowledge of the past. So can you actually go from the past to the state? If you can carry out such a process, then you would have a mechanism for going from your memory to the quantum state initially developed, and which you have to develop according to quantum rules, and the uncertainty would come arise from the fact that you couldn't do experiments in the past. So, these ideas have a close link with that, but I think they're different. Because what I'm suggesting is that there actually is a past, and the integration over the past is an expression of your inability to know that. So we'll come to that in a moment, whether this is actually saying anything new. But, perhaps all it's doing is saying it in a different way, but let's for the moment keep that open. So, now one important point to emphasize here, I think, is that this idea of going from your past to the present state, the theory depending on the past, has no linearity built into it at all. The linear superposition of quantum mechanics is not part of this theory. There is no linearity. The past history is not in any way linear space. But you can construct from the past a vector in a linear space. But the past itself is not linear. So I claim this will dispose of Schrödinger's cat. Now, I didn't use the word kill because the whole point about Schrödinger's cat, you don't know whether it's alive or dead. But I claim that Schrödinger's cat, based on the assumption that quantum states can be added, they have a physical meaning. So I'm raising the question, does that really happen? In some good approximation, quantum states can be added. But in this theory, the linearity is only approximation, it's not fundamental. So, yeah?
What is the theory?
I'm trying to describe, first of all, replacing quantum mechanics of a single particle by starting off with the classical equations, then replacing them by more complicated equations depending on the past, and that will be a pseudo-classical equation, which is meant to be... Yeah, you have to write down a definite classical path to satisfying a complicated equation, which is of the kind that we don't normally consider. Now, that's the model, which may be totally wrong, but it's the model I'm pursuing, and I'm trying to see how it connect up with physics. But in particular, it certainly isn't that linearity is thrown out. Linearity is not part of it, there's no reason for it to be there. The linearity arises only when you...
Such a theory, how would you describe this?
Well, we can't... I mean, I'm going to ask you questions like that. But let me now go to this next question. Now, this is of course, what I'm going to put forward here. Well, certainly won't work in that form, but it's an idea. Is there a possible way to associate from the past a state? Can you get from your history a state in Hilbert space from a trajectory in maybe curved space-time? I haven't involved this particle moving in even a curved, say, time background. It needn't be flat space. One thing way of thinking of doing that is imagine that this trajectory, this particle, is actually the path of a moving light source. Let's think of it as a smart star. It moves along its path according to whatever laws determine that path. It's a classical path of some kind. And we'll think of it as producing the light that it emits. So it produces a propagation of light from this path, produces a solution of the wave equation in the curved space-time background. And I claim this is a totally natural procedure. It's physical, it's mathematically processed, we do it in curved space-time, no problem. You can certainly write down any trajectory, the solution of the wave equation with that as a source, and it propagates forward the wave equation. Now, that is already an encouraging start. You've associated to past history something in a solution of a linear equation. And that linear equation, well, it's not quite right, of course, but it's a long way towards what you're hoping to do. Past history, which is non-linear. See, the passage from classical mechanics to quantum mechanics has always had this very bizarre property to me. I mean, classical mechanics is non-linear theory, quantum mechanics is linear. The point is, when you regard classical trajectory as classical, the points are not linear things, but the linear fields that they produce, when you think of the source, are linear. Going from the source to the field is a linearization process. And so the wave equation will give you a vector in Hilbert space satisfying an equation, which is, of course, the wave equation. Now, we haven't got the gauge theories yet, but a long shot. And so, of course, infinite large numbers of problems to be investigated. First of all, what relation would the Hamiltonian of this theory have to the exact equations of motion that I haven't written down? Secondly, I get the wave equation, not Schrödinger's equation. Thirdly, if you think carefully, sources have divergences of the origin, possibly to infinity. But, you know, amongst friends, what's the divergence? Physicists have solved much worse problems than this, so I regard that as a technicality which we will deal with at the quite right stage. So here is a kind of, you know, scenario of what you might hope to get. So eventually, if you went along these lines, what would the ultimate picture be? We might get some basic equations, which we don't yet know what they are. We'd have to check to see what we need. They were nonlinear equations of this retarded type. They can be defined in curved space-time, sort of thing Einstein was looking for. And there should be a precise prescription of the passage from the past to... this is getting beyond that. That would be just doing one particle quantum mechanics. To go on to field theory, of course, you have to do the same thing, not with just ordinary differential equations, but with partial differential equations. Given a past solution of this, whatever generalization of partial differential equations corresponds to the kind of generalization I've been talking about of ordinary differential equations, given the solution in the past, there should be a solution that propagates into the future. Well, it'll be very complicated, much more complicated than the linear equation, but the ordinary equations I talked about. And that would be, you know, what quantum field theory would look like. You could even propagate gravitational fields, and that would be the gravitation incorporated into the theory. So if you could do this theory, you would have a sort of pseudo-classical. By pseudo-classical, I mean that it depends on the past, but otherwise looks classical. And you would hope to write down equations for fields and curvature and space-time and all that. Now, if this happens, which is, you know, obviously that I'm running out of time, otherwise this wouldn't fall now. God has obviously intervened. Yeah, very quickly. Well, quantum is the process I told you about, by which I place.
If this process has been carried out a long time ago,
well,
for the motion of point particles that carry the mass interact with each other with retarded potential and emit radiation, and there's nothing quantum mechanical about that. This is just Maxwell's theory, or, you know, Einstein's.
Yeah. Well, I'm going beyond point particles now. I'm saying what I was trying to describe to you for places for point particles, I want now to describe for wave propagations. And I claim what I'll get from that is something a lot more complicated than classical wave equations, of course, a lot more complicated than differential equations. And I was trying to rate that density as quantum field theory. Now, I mean, I think what I'm doing, suggesting, is actually different from what anything you said. It may be wrong. It's not the same, because it doesn't. Then you can fit it all in the same picture. It's, I think, an alternative framework. It's hard to compare two different frameworks, and some aspects will be common.
It's different from the non-linear retarded field equations, I guess, from Maxwell's equations.
Well, I'm not writing down Maxwell's equations, first of all, in the first place. I haven't written down the equations for this one. I didn't quite know how to write them down.
But you may provide an example.
I'm not sure. And I'm here to be shot down. Obviously, I'm taking bullet holes all over the place. Let me finish, because we nearly finished now, and then we can disinter me from the grave. But anyway, what my point is that I'm trying to sketch some possible scenario, and what I want to suggest is that if you had a pseudo-classical theory of this kind, with a process for leading into a quantum framework of some kind, then all the complications of present-day string theory and M theory and so on would arise in that. In particular, all the higher dimensions that we have to incorporate would arise out of the four dimensions in some way, and there would be different ways of doing that, which is all the dualities would correspond to, and we would have, you'd end up with the same picture. You'd end up with, as, if not exactly correct description, a partial or approximate description, and it would, for the beginning, incorporate gravitational fields, and if you carry this through, you will get the combination of gravitation and quantum mechanics that string theory is supposed to incorporate, but it'll have some simplification. Let me try and say what would we gain by all this. Supposing that this was to happen, and I've obviously not converted you, but let's see. If I did this, would this be just a fancy way to dress up quantum mechanics and quantum field theory, which perhaps what you're saying is, I'm just using new words. It's all there. Yeah.
I know you were talking about scenarios and possibilities,
yeah,
but in your scenario, how do you imagine complex numbers that arise?
Well, I've always been interested in the way complex numbers arise in quantum mechanics, and it is one of the deep mysteries which I think nobody really understands. And I've thought about it here, and I don't claim I have an answer, and you're totally right. It's one of the questions on my list, so I'm quite aware of that. It may arise partly in terms of the equations you choose to solve from the past history, the what you want to do if you introduce spinner field, for example. It may be that they arise in that way, but it's certainly a very fundamental question. But what I'm trying to say is this such a theory, just a fancy way of using new words to describe what we've already got? Well, I claim, first of all, if you do this, it would actually have a philosophical simplification and better understanding of relations of theory to experiment, because it would say it's all inherent in the fact we can't capture our past. You don't need to worry about the notion of a Satan-Hilbert space as an abstract mathematical notion. Secondly, it would actually be a claim simpler and potentially mathematically more rigorous, and they want to actually get better mathematical foundations. So whatever you can say about present quantum field theories and string theory, nobody would claim that there's a rigorous mathematical foundation. Neither physicists nor mathematicians would claim that, and any indication that one will get rigorous foundation is certainly a long way off. So an alternative model, even if it's very close, almost the same, if it led to a rigorous mathematical foundation, would be an improvement. Next, I would try to indicate roughly here that what you might hope to get out of this is some understanding of what the M theory really is. You know, that's the question mark at the moment in physics. We have all this marvelous evidence pointing towards a theory. We have various string theories that give you different aspects of the theory. But the question is, what is this theory? Is it just a collection of the bits of evidence we have? Is it a better way of looking at it? So that's what I've been searching for. And finally, of course, any theory that comes forward which is not quite the same as the standard theories, there is always the possibility that there's some small deviation from the standard theory which might be capable of experimental verification. That's the ultimate test of a really new theory. Does it show you something different which you can actually test experimentally? Well, that's, of course, way off in the future. And, of course, if you want to pursue this line, it would be a stimulus to try to understand the mathematics of these complicated retarded differential equations, which I've hinted at, and which one knows a little bit about. Clearly, if they were important for a potential physical theory, you would do an awful lot more work, and there wouldn't be just one book in the library read by nobody, but it would be read by lots of people. So that's, of course, a possible scenario. And now, I hardly need to give you the list of problems ahead, because people have already pointed most of them out. But you'd have to explore the different kinds of retarded differential equations in the physical context to find which ones were relevant. You'd have to compare. You have to look at the various arguments which support quantum mechanics experimentally, experimentalist Bell's inequality, which are usually disposed of any attempt by Einstein and others to argue against quantum mechanics, the Bohr-Einstein correspondence and all that. So you'd have to ask how these various methods which got rid of alternatives, how they would fare against something new like this. And open question. The question you just raised, where do the complex numbers come into this? Roger Penrose has always been pointing this question to me, and I don't really have the answer anyway. And I've mentioned here, going from the original model of classical mechanics to field theory, you'd have to involve yourself in partial differential equations of this complicated type. There is no such theory at the moment. I don't think any book exists that deals with partial differential equations, except for beyond the ordinary differential equations. So that mathematics does not exist. So here we are, that's what I'm trying to say. In physical terms, the principles that I've tried to discard at the fundamental level are the time reversibility and the duality, for example, the duality between position and momentum. In simple models of mechanics, there is this marvelous duality between position and momentum, which has beautiful mathematical consequences. I'm throwing that away because I distinguish between the position and the velocity as being rather different animals. The velocity has got absorbed in the past, and so you've lost that, and that's tough. Things have been preserved. We try to preserve a geometrical description. Everything should be determined by naturally covariant differential geometric equations, and of course preserve the use of calculus. And both of these, I hope, would be approved of by Einstein. So I think I've still got Einstein on my side, even if I've got Dick here and everybody else against me. So you have to weigh up your supporters against your opponents. Well, if I've I've done my task if I serve to provoke you, and I will be here for a whole 2 weeks to try to understand the arguments and people have put forward during the seminar, the questions they've asked, and to understand whether they are so devastating that I can forget about the subject and go back to doing mathematics. You know, this has been something which keeps bugging me. I can't get rid out of me, because it, you know, if there's anything here, we'll have to pursue it. If it's obvious this is totally wrong, for lots of reasons, I'll be able to sleep better at night. So maybe what I say here will be at least good for my psychology and my sleep pattern. Well, that's, since you asked so many questions already, almost unnecessary to ask for more, but obviously that's still available. Okay.
There was a real change. I mean,
we can obviously take any classical system, point mechanics as you illustrated, or field theory, and
discretize time, thereby introducing a dependence on the past in the way you described. But what I didn't, and therefore, clearly, all of classical physics has a version of this type, which depends slightly on the past, and will be indistinguishable if that R is sufficiently small, Planck time, from anything we've ever measured. But what I didn't see at all was the second step, quantum mechanics. What a version of your theory is for quantum mechanics, and how possibly you could take any quantum mechanical description we have of anything and introduce such a dependence on the past in a way that would, in the limit, reproduce quantum mechanics.
Well, I mean, obviously I didn't make myself very clear. My idea, naive that is, was that we have a sort of modification of some classical system with dependence on the past built in, so a new system, more complicated. From the past, the initial data is past history. From the past history, I would produce state in the Hilbert space, satisfying differential equation by some natural process. I'd have a language that could translate this complicated but almost classical equation into the frame of quantum mechanics. And that would be a dictionary, which might be only approximated because the process might fail at some levels and so on. And that would actually convert the classic, this picture I'm talking about, into quantum mechanics, and you would get all quantum mechanics out of it. But the interpretation would be different, and there's something we're missing. In particular, you can't add states arbitrarily to get a new state. That is not an allowed process, not without, except in some approximation. So I'm not claiming that this quantum mechanics disappear. I'm not replacing quantum mechanics at that stage. I'm replacing the classical mechanics by a fancier, more classical mechanics, which then leads to quantum mechanics in an almost equivalent way. That's what the story was trying to say. So it's okay. As Dirac would say, that's a statement, not a question. Maybe some young guys can help me out there. All these questions are hostile. I want some friendly ones. And I know there are mathematicians in the audience, so I have some support. Okay.
Hi. One of the characteristic features of quantum mechanics is interference, right? And that is, particles behave like waves, as in the two-slit experiment, which you mentioned. Right. Now, in the two-slit experiment, if you say the electron went through one or the other of the slits, or that you don't know, right, you lose the interference pattern. So how are you going to get this characteristic feature of quantum mechanics out if you just assume that the particle always has one trajectory, whatever the ignorance of the time?
When you change a paradigm, it's very hard for people to change their thoughts to follow the paradigm. And I'm afraid, you know, sorry to say this, but if you're a well-trained physicist, you think according to the rules of well-trained physics. You can't talk about the trajectory of a particle now without knowing its past history. And what you seem to you to be all the same particle doing passing one are actually different particles because they came differently in the past. And since I claim that you can go from the past, one particle, you never have one particle.
I do,
but you don't know it. You don't know its past. You don't know what it's going to do. Because of its past is unknown to you. Now you think of it quantum mechanically, but you don't know what it's going to do. One reason, I think I don't know what to do because I don't know its past history. I claim I want to give a dictionary, it will go from one to the other, so you can't say the two-slit experiment will fail because I'll reproduce quantum mechanics for you. I'm going to wave function out of it.
No, you haven't given any description for
Well, I thought I'd done. Sketch, you know, description, which is quote, outline, possible method of getting there. Yes, I claim that was the purpose. And I obviously failed to get it across. I see some mathematical hands in the audience might help me out.
In the spirit of the talk, maybe I can try to make a constructive comment by briefly pointing out a sort of a common thread between the class of models you're suggesting, Kahn's class of models, and some unsolved problems in string theory. So one simple way to think about the class of models you're talking about is just to do a power series expansion of x of t minus r in t, in the derivatives, the higher derivatives of t. So then you have an infinite order differential equation. Yeah. Similarly, quantum field theory on a non-commutative space-time can be expressed in terms of a star product, which is an exponential of derivatives, and therefore is also, in some sense, a differential equation with an infinite number of derivatives. And the best non-perturbative formulation of string theory we have is string field theory, which is expressed in terms of Witten's star product on strings, which is also expressed in terms of some exponential of derivatives, but which we don't understand how to grapple with as well. So even the classical theory of strings requires dealing with this difficult class of mathematical problems, which seems to have some common threads.
Yeah.
I'm afraid when we really do understand this, it may involve going beyond geometry, but...
I think I agree with what you're saying, and I think the point is made here. I think you can formally convert many of these very properly into some sort of problem in infinitely many variables, perhaps by power series expansion or something else. And that gives some way of tackling them, which is perhaps equivalent to what people do in string theory. It won't be a fundamental way, because in some sense it's not. And I was sort of postponing that, assuming you could understand the fundamentals of this. But if you went into all that, you would, of course, reproduce much of what happened. So at the moment, I was saying, maybe that isn't necessary. Maybe there's a better way of understanding it. In particular, you might have better foundations for it at a rigorous level, which, when you start all doing infinite dimensions, you tend to lose. So I agree. I agree with you that this is a kind of possible connecting link between different points of view and make it look more tractable, string theories. But I would, at a sort of basic level, philosophical level, what I'm aiming for, these are ugly things, you know, passes, expansions, and variables. We'd hope for something nicer, as long as you're only doing hope. You know, why give up the hope too soon? But I agree.
First, I want to comment that with respect to the question Tony asked you in the middle of the lecture, I don't think I've ever before seen a physicist pressing a mathematician for a definition.
I knew I'd have some support over there.
like Steve Giddings, I've been puzzled by the trying to think about how to make this into a relativistic idea. I mean, if you're giving up instantaneous time, somehow if you make that relativistically invariant, you have to allow whatever solutions to equations you're talking about to depend on locations nearby the current location as well as times in the recent past. And I don't know if you have any comment about that, because that's...
Well, I think being naive, let's forget about what relativistic invariance means in some sense. I was thinking I'm trying to draw a path in space-time. Time is built into it, the path is built in. That is, if you draw a path in space-time, you're doing relativistic theory.
I always had in my mind that maybe it's not very easy. When you write x, it's actually a vector you have.
R3. Well, not just a point, it's a number, three numbers. R3. It's a point in the manifold, if you like. So this is a point in the manifold.
Surely you were thinking of a system that might have 20 butterflies.
Oh, eventually, of course, if you start off with the baby model, you start off with particle or scalar field. Eventually, you'd have bundles and stuff on top of that, of course. But let's get to square one. You start with a simple particle scalar field. On.
Ignore the radiation field, and they will have, that's a relativistically invariant theory. And you're right, each particle will depend on all the stuff in its past outcome. The trajectories of the other x's, the other components of x. And it's a rather, rather unmathematical way of describing such a lovely system.
I just have a request for David Gross. I mean, there's sort of been two lectures going on,
And I've understood neither completely. But since there are some mathematicians in the audience, I wonder if you could clarify in a few minutes how retarded green functions recapitulate Atiyah's ideas. I mean, because I don't see this. Yeah, I just like you to expiate. Just explain the example like a professor to us.
Right. And they interact via the electromagnetic field. One produces an electromagnetic field, the other is feeling. Right? So each charge particle at a given point, the X is a big vector, and some components of X describe one charge particle, which feel. Yeah. In its backward light cone. In fact, Feynman, I just read Feynman's thesis, which just came out in publication. And there he has a wonderful discussion of theories which depend on the past. By the way, because he has a Lagrangian formulation where it looks like you depend on the whole past in order to construct the wave function, the path integral. It's a beautiful description. Yeah. I understand
that. And it's a good example of mathematics, but there's a difference in my perspective. I got a single particle, no other host.
I know, and that's
fast.
Right.
It's so therefore different. It's not other particles.
It's called self-interaction now.
And so, in something I agree that what you said is a good example mathematically of an equation itself. But I'm trying to suggest something may occur fundamentally for one particle without interaction with other things.
Yeah, I know, but one particle by itself is a rather boring universe.
Well, no.
You can indeed regard all the rest as providing.
I used to think the vacuum was very dull until I learned what physicists do with the vacuum. So one particle is a lot more complicated than the vacuum.
If you want an example with one particle, then consider the n minus one particles as special. Call them y, and they provide the external potential. Which for, if you want to make a relativistic example, has to be a little bit more complicated.
One more question.
Thank you.
Really, one simple point is that the past of a single point particle would look roughly like a conformal two-sphere, namely the celestial sphere, if you like. I mean, the past light cone.
It's not the past light cone, it's the past actual, the past that's within the light cone. It's the past history, it's actually a particular trajectory inside the light cone. These are not light signals, it's the past history of the particle moving as a real particle, possibly with mass. So it's not quite the same as light signals.
Yeah, so in that sense, what would the past look like from a single?
Well, you don't know your past, it's what it got there by solving this differential equation in the past, and you keep chasing your tail to, backwards for infinity. We don't know the past, and that's the uncertainty which we face. You can guess on the past, and the guess would involve an averaging process. And the averaging process would get you close to Feynman's approach to quantum field theory. So, I mean, there are links between... Look, another fundamental question in quantum mechanics is the question of everything is present in terms of probabilities. You have the square of the amplitude, give you... There are probability statements. Statements have probabilities. And here there will be the same statement. We don't know our past. We estimate. In the absence of information, we do some probabilistic calculation, and so we would end up with probabilistic calculations, which would then look like quantum mechanics. I mean, the outcome would be similar, if not exactly the same. All that's slightly different is the nature of the interpretation of the assumption. And I'm just suggesting that you could start with an assumption which is geometrical, but in some sense not very far removed from the assumption that you make in quantum mechanics. And therefore you would actually hope to reproduce quantum mechanics. So the aim is, as I said at the beginning, not to throw quantum mechanics out, but they replace it by another theory, which quantum mechanics emerges, and the differences will be rather small, and only appear at certain levels. And for most purposes, they'll be, not noticeable. So all standard experiments will give you the same results. Well, it'll be linked to, as I said, indicated to, and you pointed out, it'll be linked to the very small scale. Or it'll be built into that differential equation which I didn't write down.
So that's the Planck time?
Yeah, well, something like that. So, yeah. So it's got, this equation has to be, is not a differential equation, it involves some dependence on the past. Whatever that dependence on the past is, incorporates the information about Planck's constant. And that, the discretization and the constant of quantum mechanics are all hidden in that formula I didn't write down, but I gave sketches of... Well, I don't know what's in that equation, so how can you know what's enough?
you can't out of a scale of length and time long.
Okay, well, I mean,
right dimension.
Right. Well, the equation. Well, you want to throw in some other. What do you want to throw in? Masses or whatever like that. What are the physical quantities you want in? Yeah. Well, what are the other? I mean, I only put in space-time. So, if you want to put other quantities like mass or anything else, you have to put those into the equations. I didn't write down equations involving anything more complicated. If you do, you'll have extra-physical data, but the quantum effects should be somehow really determined by this dependence on the past, and that will have some sort of scales in it which determine future things. That's the idea. It may not work. It may be crazy, as I pointed out, and it certainly has an enormous amount of theoretical obstacles to develop even its formulation. But I claim it's a provocative idea, which obviously provokes a lot of discussion. And if it leads you to get a better theory, I'll be happy.
Okay, well, with that, let's thank Michael again.